The Anton Savage Show with Kearies.ie on News Talk.
We're joined by An Taoiseach Simon Harris. And as I understand it, in terms of the Night and Day Festival, Taoiseach, this isn't your first rodeo.
No, I was here. I was here 2 years ago, I think, when it was in Castlereagh, when it started off as a new young festival, and it's only grown since then, so it's great to be back.
Weather always like this?
I think the weather was very good the last time I was here too, so well, I'm going to take the credit for that.
You are very welcome, and thank you for joining us. Can we start with the events of this week? Because there have been a lot of discussion about the experience that you had during the week, or rather the experience that your family had during the week, which was that bomb threat at your house. Before we get into the policy and the implications of it, from a personal level, what effect does that have?
Yeah, I never like talking about it too much because I'm well aware when people engage in this sort of stuff, it's done to intimidate, it's done to upset, and it's done to disrupt family life. So I never like to give people too much satisfaction in terms of an insight into what that is like. But as you can imagine, and as anyone can imagine on a human level, when you have two young children, one is five and one is two, and this sort of news seeps out about their home, their safe haven, you can imagine the very disruptive impact that has. So look, I think this is a great country, and I genuinely mean that. I just think people right across this country are pretty sound, and people can agree or disagree with your politics. They're still pretty sound. I've travelled more than 10,000 kilometres, which is apparently further than Dublin to Japan, in the last 10 or 11 weeks. And that has been my absolute experience of people right across this country. There is something, though, a little more sinister going on that isn't reflective of the people of this country.
Broadly, you mean?
Yeah. I think so. And I'm always a bit conflicted on this because I don't want to overstate it, but I do want to call it out because the reason I don't want to overstate it is for what I've just said. It's not reflective of the majority of people in this country at all. But it does need to be called out because I detest it as much if it happens to a member of the opposition, if it happened to any public figure, as I do if it happens to myself or my family. And that is that attempt to move into a space that we hadn't really seen in this country before. And with the greatest of respect for the media, and I have great respect for the media, we need to be very careful that we don't start accidentally normalising or legitimising it by using phrases like protest or hoax. Okay, so there was not, thank God, a bomb at my house. But it wasn't a hoax. It was an attempt to intimidate. There was not a protest outside my house recently when people stood there with their faces fully masked. There was, again, an attempt to intimidate. So I just think words like protest is a very legitimate thing in a democracy. I've been protested about and I've been on protests. None of this is in that space.
Well, Drew Harris, the Garda Commissioner, says that it's being reported that he wants further legislative powers to be able to unmask people in situations like that. Is he right that he needs that?
Well, now that he's asked for it, he'll absolutely get it. And the Minister for Justice was very clear on that yesterday. So, I mean, I would have said directly to the Garda Commissioner myself, as would Helen McEntee, any additional powers and laws you need will be granted. So, yeah, absolutely, we will legislate in that space. But I also think there are already a lot of laws on the statute book, including the Public Order Act. But I think absolutely when the Garda Commissioner says his members need more...
But sorry, is that to therefore suggest, if I read between the lines, that you think the guards have capacity to act in a more... aggressive is the wrong phrase, but a more determined manner than they have so far?
No, I've nothing but praise for the Gardaí in terms of my own experiences in life and also the incredible work they do on a daily basis. But I do think it's important, and it's not for me to tell the Gardaí how to do their job, but I do think it's important that we never arrive at a situation where we decide that the Taoiseach of a country can't walk down a street or that it's okay for people to gather outside anybody's
home. But to an extent we have that. I mean, we had your constituency colleague having a similar experience. We've had Helen McIntyre with a similar bomb threat. We've had...
In the opposition, we've had Paul Murphy, a despicable act outside his home. Roderick O'Gorman. I think Mary Lou McDonald on occasion. So this, again, this should only ever unite us rather than divide us in terms of anyone who believes in democracy calling it out. But I can tell you this, I am satisfied that the guards take these matters very seriously. I am satisfied with that.
What about you? You mentioned the impact that something like this has on your own kids. I saw during the week Rishi Sunak talking about the impact of his children seeing racial epithets be thrown at him. You're a while now into the office of Taoiseach. Do you give consideration to the impact that your political position will have on your children? Is there any way to mitigate the kind of impact that that could have, particularly as they get older and become more aware?
Yeah, so of course you do. And I think every parent thinks exactly that. I'm fortunate that in general my children are at an age where they're somewhat blissfully ignorant. Not entirely, certainly not the 5-year-old. Not entirely. And you know, they see election posters up and ask questions and that sort of stuff.
But it's a short road till they see social media and they see comments.
Yeah, and I did think becoming Taoiseach when your children are that age is perhaps more advantageous than if your children are a little bit older. So look, we'll have to consider how to deal with that as a family when we get to that point. But at the moment I try to just I just keep them out of it, and I find children at that age, once it doesn't disrupt their life and they're going about their own activities, and they tend to be okay.
And in terms of the wider environment as you see it, is there anything that you can point to as a solution to the kind of coarsening that you've been describing?
I think a couple of things. Firstly, I think there genuinely has to be deterrent. So, and I believe the overwhelming majority of people in this country would fully support what I'm about to say, which is there has to be consequences for anybody who engages in this sort of behaviour. And I say that in a broad sense, not in relation to my specific situation, but there does have to be, there can never be a tolerance or an acceptance either by the law or those who must enforce the law in relation to that. So I think that's the first thing. I think the second thing is all of us, politicians, media, everybody, we all need to maybe reflect on how we do politics to some degree, and I include myself in this, by the way. There's none of us who are above this criticism in terms of being disagreeing but not losing our civility. I don't think that's
there's a long way between a lack of civility though and masked people outside your house.
There is, but if you start dehumanizing politicians, if you start dehumanizing people, and that happens gradually and it happens slowly and it sometimes happens subconsciously, but it's not good. If all, you know, I mean, politicians in Ireland, for all the flaws people wish to level at us, we are of our community. We have an electoral system that cannot enable what we see in other jurisdictions. In other jurisdictions, you have a list system and a member of parliament might visit their constituency on rare occasions to say hello. We are of the community. The place that I represent in Dáil Éireann is the place that I have lived in every day of my life. And I think that's one of the beauties of our system, because again, for all the legitimate debate and criticism about politics, it's actually quite hard in Irish politics to become detached from those you represent, because you live among them. You see them in the shop, you see them at the schools, you see them as you go about your business. And I think that's the great strength of our system.
Can I ask you a little bit about the experience of being Taoiseach? You're a while into it now. You're heading up on the summer break. Is it difficult, the fact that your predecessor is so willing to be out in media? Enda Kenny had the good grace to disappear when Leo Varadkar took over. Leo Varadkar is still very actively out there. Is that challenging for you?
No, not at all. And I never expected Leo to be anything other than continuing to be discursive. He's a great mind, and he wants to continue, and I want him to continue to play a role in public discourse. For me, I'm just giving the job my absolute all. It's hectic. In the last 36 hours or so, I've been at a European Council summit, sitting in a room with Emmanuel Macron, Olaf Scholz and others, debating huge kind of global and geopolitical issues. I've then been in Kerry, I've been in Sligo, I'm now here in Roscommon at a music festival, I've been in government buildings in between. It's an extraordinarily, the variety of things that come at you as Taoiseach is very interesting. It's also a very different skill set, by the way, and this is something that, again, might sound blindingly obvious when you say it out loud, but it hadn't really dawned on me until you actually think it through. You know, when you're a minister, you're running a department, and you can be extraordinarily busy and extraordinarily challenged at times. But actually, being Taoiseach is a different skill set that's required. All of a sudden, you're kind of the conductor of the orchestra. You're the convener of meetings. You're the person who bangs heads together to try and make progress. So there's a lot that you can do from the office of the Taoiseach in terms of trying to get people into a room, find solutions, and I suppose reaching across. Because I think we've a great public service. I think we're very well served by our civil service, but by its very structure, by its very nature, it's quite siloed. You know, you're in the department of this, the department of that, that's my job, that's not my job. Actually, the Taoiseach is one of the few people who has an ability to actually maybe look above that and break down those silos. And that's what I'm enjoying.
When you took the job, you characterised it in the early stages by energy, the kind of thing that you're describing, being everywhere at all times and running around like mad. You also had an immediate election campaign to get into. Now that you're slightly more established, is there a big strategic plan that you have? Is there something that you want to achieve in the office, or is it simply bring energy, do your best, and that's your time?
No, so I think there has to be a degree. anyone who's Taoiseach, there has to be a degree of dealing with issues that arise when you're the Taoiseach. So, you know, conflict in the Middle East, showing moral leadership, I hope this country is on that, is important to me. Continuing to assist with the humanitarian crisis in Ukraine, making sure your economy, you know, ticks along well and that you can deliver a good budget. All of that's important to me. But my overarching thing that I want to deliver above and beyond anything else is I want to make this the best country in the world in which to be a child. And I do think, and you might say, oh, that's terribly lofty, but I actually think it's important when you're Taoiseach to have moonshots. It's important to have something above the day-to-day, because
it's somewhat of an immeasurable moonshot, though, isn't it?
Maybe. But, well, no, I mean, I don't think it is, because I know what it looks like. It looks like making sure that you live in a country where every young person, no matter who they are, what their parents did before them, whether they're male or female, whether they live in rural or urban Ireland, can reach their full potential. It's not a short-term one. It's not when we're going to get to the next election and people will say, how did that go? But I do think when you're the Taoiseach, and, you know, there's only been 16 of us, I think it's important that you actually set big goals for the country. We have a child poverty and wellbeing unit in the Department of the Taoiseach now. Like, what additionality is that going to bring? What difference will there? Because I'm very conscious that no matter who the Taoiseach is, whatever his or her name is, there are certain things that happen anyway. There would be a budget. What's in the budget depends on who the Taoiseach is, if you get me. So I'm setting that as my overarching kind of principle and my driving aim, because I do think you need that to keep kind of focused.
You mentioned some of the international politics you're engaged in. You talked about having a conversation with Macron. What did you make of his strategy of a snap election?
There's a rule when you're Taoiseach about not talking about other people's politics, but it's certainly interesting.
Instructive?
No, not at all. He had a very different outcome to his European look and electoral system than we did. In an Irish context, I do believe it's important that the government runs full term. And if people are wondering why, well, firstly, I think it's important that you do what you say. And that's what I've said. I want the government to run full term. There's no kind of positioning or posturing in that. There's not me trying to keep you in the dark and then going one day, surprise, we're having an election. I'm very clear that we have a lot of work to do.
But full term isn't to the exact day. And nobody's
correct.
Going to split hairs over a couple of months. And if the general consensus is, look, rather than going through by-elections and rather than having an election in the middle of winter, I don't think anybody's going to say you fundamentally breached your promise by not going full term.
Well, what I mean is there isn't going to be an immediate election. What I mean is we're going to deliver another budget. And what I mean is I think the general election should take place next year. And, you know, because actually you can do a lot in politics in a week. I've only been Taoiseach for 12 weeks and I already feel that there's areas that I'm beginning to get my teeth stuck into. So I think it's, in an odd sort of way, having a short, sharp, focused period of time between now and the next general election, between now and March, enables me to keep all my ministers terribly focused on these issues and to continue to work with Micheál Martin and Eamon Ryan, as it is now and will be soon, the new Green Party leader.
Although, I mentioned your predecessor earlier, your predecessor has talked about the sort of the Harris hop, the bounce that Fine Gael has gained by virtue of your appointment. Do you think that bounce will sustain for another 5-6 months?
I don't read too much into this. I'm a young person, but a bit of an old-fashioned view. I mean, I actually believe that if you come to work hard and do a good job, people might vote for you. And I actually think we need a bit more of that in Irish politics and a little less kind of, oh, what did the latest opinion poll say? Oh, how long will a bounce last? It's not what interests me. I mean, I don't over...
Well, you have to get elected.
You do.
You can't achieve anything that you want to unless you actually get it.
No, believe me, I understand that too. And I take elections very seriously, as I think people saw in terms of the local and European elections. But when I travelled around the country and met people during the local elections, I don't overinterpret the results, because I don't think people who voted for my party, they didn't vote saying everything is wonderful. They voted to say, OK, we're listening, Simon, show us what you can do. And what they've given me now is a period of time to prove myself as Taoiseach and to prove that this three-party government can make progress on some of the issues that they talked to us about when we went around the country. And I think it's important that we do that. I also am very conscious that as a leader of Fine Gael, we have a fair few TDs who are retiring the next election, and that's quite a normal thing. People are entitled to retire, but as a result of that, now I need to work my way through who their successors are and allow them put their names forward. So there's a big piece of organisational work I need to do as well.
You said that it is generally not done for you to comment on other people's politics. Nonetheless, let me ask you to do it again. If you were advising Joe Biden this weekend, what advice would you give him?
What advice would I give Joe? But well, I had a conversation with Joe Biden recently. He was very kind to ring me about 2 weeks ago. And we had a very good conversation on a number of issues, including the Middle East, where I think it's really important that this country keeps on speaking truth to power right across the world in terms of the need for a ceasefire.
How did his mental acuity compare to what you saw in the debate?
We had an excellent conversation. He was very informed on a range of issues, whether it was the Northern Ireland executive, the work of Joe Kennedy, the person he's made special envoy to Northern Ireland, whether it was Ireland's decision to recognise the state of Palestine. He was across all of those details and we had a really good conversation. It was about 15 minutes long. We had a very good conversation. I'm around long enough in politics, though, to know that, you know, you can have a good debate night and you can have a bad debate night. I think it's safe enough to say it's very early in the cycle to have a debate. I mean, generally...
Good, bad, and this disaster. I mean, to have the mood music directly after your debate be about whether or not you remain on the ticket, it's hard to find another disaster that bad.
Well, I'm definitely not going to comment on who should run in the US presidential election because it's not my place, and I wouldn't appreciate if they started giving that view on Irish politics. But what is a statement of fact is that a number of people, including President Biden, President Obama, and others, did acknowledge that it wasn't a good debate, that it didn't go well from their perspective. And I often think in politics that that's a good way of approaching something. If it didn't go your way, come out, call it as is, and dust yourself down and get back in the saddle.
Immigration, Taoiseach. Hmm. You were responsible for taking decisive action in respect of the Mount Street tented village that had developed. The end result of that, though it wasn't an immediate one, it went through a couple of iterations, is the Grand Canal is now off limits as an amenity for tourists and workers in the city. That can't have been what you intended.
Well, that can't be what continues, but we just need to take a little step back, because the decision to remove the tents at Mount Street and indeed at the Grand Canal was done for a very simple reason, two simple reasons. One, there are laws in our country that have to be abided, and we cannot have a situation where migration policy is so ad hoc that we can basically have random situations in relation to accommodation. That's not good for anyone. The second, though, and the most important reason was a humanitarian reason. In Mount Street, we very nearly had a public health emergency. Very nearly. A horrific situation, access to sanitation and the likes. And at the canal, there are real and pressing dangers
but
there
for
a whole variety of reasons.
In both of those, that same situation still pertains. We still have an ad hoc situation, or we did until recently, unless it has changed, where we were funding NGOs to give people tents and wish them luck. And then we still have a situation where, although those people may not now be pitching their tents on Main Street, they are trying to find anywhere else around the city that they can pitch them. There's no difference to either of
them. Yeah, and look, I've got to be honest about this. I mean, I did not say when we cleared Main Street, and I don't even like the phrase cleared, these are human beings, but when we ended the situation at Main Street, I didn't say this is not going to see a scenario again with further tenses somewhere else. I never said that because it's not possible for anyone to say that.
The understanding was clear that this was meant to be decisive action, shifting people around the corner.
No, and here's the next bit of decisive action. So we have never seen anything like Mount Street happen again since then, because what Mount Street was effectively, in my view, the state and its agencies turning a blind eye to a situation for months and months and months. Wasn't acceptable from any perspective at all. There was a siloed approach and almost a national game of pass the parcel. That's not my agency, that's somebody else's. Not tolerating that. The next bit of decisive action, though, is this. We have to be honest, I don't have a position where I can provide everybody who comes to this country with turnkey accommodation. Don't have that ability to do it. No point pretending we do. We don't. We do have an obligation to provide people with shelter. That means safe shelter with access to sanitation on state-owned lands. We have identified, as people know, a site that is currently being advanced in relation to that. And we're trying currently to bridge from now to then. That will mean.
And are we still bridging it by NGOs giving out tents?
We are, and that's not a situation I want to see happen. But I also have to be honest, until I can say, as Taoiseach, that we can provide you with the proper tent and proper access to sanitation, there does have to be some degree of a humanitarian approach to this. These are human beings at the end of the day, often in very vulnerable situations. We are going to get, within a matter of weeks, to a situation where we will have tented facilities on state-owned land with access to sanitation. That is good for everybody, because that is a controlled environment that we can monitor from a safety point of view, from a health point of view and everything else. But I have to say this, every conversation we seem to have in this country about migration seems to begin and often end with accommodation. And that is doing a huge disservice to the issue, because, of course, accommodation is only an outworking of the migration policy. Where we need to put ourselves under more pressure is on things like processing times, on things like deportations, because every single immigration system in the world has to have a deportation as a part of it, on things like...
Before we get to the broader issues, can we just go back and nail that down? So as we now stand, we will continue to have a situation where people are given tents and their wished luck. We will continue for several weeks to have a situation where the places that are most logical for them to put those tents, like the Grand Canal, because it is some level of green space, are fenced off from them and they are told to find elsewhere, but do find somewhere because you're going to have to pitch your tent in the city, and that's going to pertain. And the Grand Canal is going to continue to be fenced off for several weeks, if not months.
So they're not all as directly linked as your question suggests. So in relation to the NGOs, we're continuing going to support our NGOs to provide humanitarian assistance to people coming into our country until the state is able to do that. Yes, we are. In relation to tents, what I should say, even in the absence of having that state-owned facility ready to go so far, we are seeing people being provided with accommodation at a number of locations, including some in my constituency, on a regular basis. And then thirdly, in relation to the issue of barriers, and I don't want to see canals blocked off, there are legitimate issues that Waterways Ireland and other having to consider there in relation to public safety. And what you don't want to be is the government or indeed a state agency who did something that ends up resulting in a very dangerous situation for people. But this idea of erecting barricades across our city is not a long-term policy or a sustainable policy, and I expect we'll see progress on that within the next few weeks.
As in, we are going to get the Grand Canal, those fences
correct.
Will be gone soon.
Yes.
That's your understanding?
Understanding from engaging with the agencies, yeah.
The other thing that I wanted to ask you about, we were speaking yesterday to Matt Carty, Sinn Féin's defence spokesperson, and he was saying that the time has come for the government to directly intervene between IALPA and Aer Lingus, because what we now have is a situation that the state is being impacted. One of our most valuable sources of tourist revenue, that being Americans, because though they're not the biggest in total numbers, they bring the biggest wallets when they arrive over. That is being impacted immediately and will probably leave a legacy of damage. And what he was saying is, regardless of who's right in this, government needs to intervene and force people into a room. Is he right?
So if I was opposition spokesperson, I'd probably say the exact same, because if you're listening at home, that sounds really like a great idea. But of course, the next question is the more interesting. What does he mean the government should do? Because I fully agree with him and anybody else who says we need people to get into a room. Absolutely. We can't lock them in the room, though. So the government has already endeavoured to get people in a room. I myself, personally, as Taoiseach, met last week with unions and employers through what we call the LEAF, which is the Labour Employer Economic Forum. I chair it. And at that, I specifically raised the issue of Aer Lingus.
And were Forsa, IALP and Aer Lingus at this forum?
Forsa were there, and both the business enough people were there with enough lines of communication, let's put it like that.
And what was the message you sent through those lines of communication?
Get yourselves in a room and I made the point, which is so logical, it's blindingly obvious, which is there has never been an industrial relations dispute in the history of the state, or any state, that ends without dialogue and engagement and compromise. They're going to get there. Could they just get there without putting us all through the misery that comes in the meantime? That's the point I'm going to continue to make. Now, let me say this to the listeners. The state already has made an intervention through the Labour Court. So the Labour Court already met both parties separately in the last couple of days.
And will again tomorrow.
Yeah, and on that occasion they said, hang on a second, you guys are too far apart. We'll be back to you in a few days. And the private conversations, I'm sure, took place. And now, again, on Monday, the Labour Court will again meet. So that is government, through its industrial relations mechanism, endeavouring to make progress. But both sides need to dig deep here. There is absolutely zero public support for this action. Zero. And that's not, by the way, me letting the employer off the hook. I'm not apportioning blame. I'm not.
You don't. Well, sorry, first of all, before we get to the employer, it is your view that nobody supports the pilot's position?
Very few. Very few. Because at the end of the day, I think most Irish people, again, Irish people are decent and full of common sense. They want to see this resolved, and they believe people should, instead of bringing the planes out of the sky and not allowing people go on their summer holidays, they should lock themselves in a room and not leave the room until they sort this out.
What then about the employer?
But I do think the employer also has, because I'm not, and I want to be respectful to the union here. Anybody has a right to put in a pay claim. Of course they do. I want to be respectful to that position too. So the employer side also need to dig deep. There has to be a compromise found. That's how you resolve disputes. And the government will not be found wanting in terms of making the industrial relations mechanism of the state available. We don't own Aer Lingus, but I'm very clear on this. I have no tolerance for any side to this dispute if they won't engage.
On that thing of we don't own Aer Lingus, if we were America, we would have American Airlines, we'd have Delta, we'd have Southwest, we'd have a million other carriers who might be able to step in and pick up. In a small island nation, connectivity matters. Is there anything that you think needs to be done to ensure that an international company's industrial relations problems can't impact on us as a country the way this has again?
I think it worries me that there is such clearly an amount of bad blood in this dispute, that the level of overwhelming rejection of any offer from Aer Lingus or other institutions, that does have to tell me something. If all of your employers are voting, or all your pilot employees are voting by such large numbers, we shouldn't ignore that either. So whilst I'm critical of the action, I'm also saying, hang on a second, if so many, what is it, about 90% of people, more maybe, are rejecting the offer, that doesn't suggest to me that there's good working relations in Aer Lingus, and that should be a cause for concern as well.
But what about the nation being held hostage? Because IAG isn't an Irish company, Aer Lingus isn't an Irish company, and we are dealing with the fallout of...
Yeah, and I think we need to give some consideration, separate to pay, because we don't have a role in that, but I think we need to give some consideration to a forum and a structure where we can continue to engage on aviation policy with all the actors. I know there are some, but certainly post the dispute, and I want to get, when we get this dispute resolved first, I think there is merit in this. We are an island nation. We do rely on connectivity. But in the here and now, the government needs the two parties to this dispute to resolve it. Not because the government needs it, because the people of Ireland need it. And like, there's people who've been saving all year, putting a few bob aside to bring the kids on a summer holiday. There's also people who are owning hotels, B&Bs, restaurants, who are dependent on the tourists to come here to give them their few bob to get through the longer winter months. So this has to be resolved.
It would be remiss of me to talk to you without bringing up the issue that has been in so many minds recently, which is that of the assault of Natasha O'Brien, the suspended sentence that followed, and the reports that have now emerged that the Defence Forces has numerous similar cases within the Defence Forces and underestimated the number when they reported to government. I assume government isn't exactly delighted with the response it got from the army on that.
Well, I'm not, and I get annoyed when people try to misrepresent my position, the government's position, and I think my position being, I mean, it's my job to try and speak for people in this country as the head of their government. Like, we have a zero tolerance policy in this country to domestic, sexual and gender-based violence. That's not a political slogan, Anton. That involves all of us changing the culture in our workplace, in our homes, in our communities, and ultimately in the country. And that means every single organisation and institution of the state has to change too. So zero tolerance means something. And I am frustrated and concerned. There's already regulations in place. So again, I don't need anybody explaining this to me or writing me long tweets telling me I don't understand this. I understand it very well. There's already regulations in place that say if somebody has been convicted and sentenced to a custodial sentence or a suspended sentence, that the dismissal process would commence. That's already a regulation. There's also other things that exist which allow people to be put on, I think they call it local leave and the likes. I have a view that within the parameters of that, it is entirely possible to A, have an efficient dismissal of anybody from the Defence Forces, follow your due process, but have an efficient dismissal for anybody who is convicted of a serious crime. But I also think we have to go further than that, and I really welcome the Taoiseach's intervention in this, and indeed the Chief of Staff's, and I welcome his comments as recently as Friday, I think, where there are certain crimes that if alleged against somebody, without prejudice, somebody does need to be suspended from active duty. I don't think that's a radical concept. I'm slightly irked that we even have to say it. I don't think that's a radical concept. If you're accused of sexual assault and you wear the uniform of Óglaigh na hÉireann, you can't continue to wear that uniform without prejudice until the matter is resolved. That's what zero tolerance looks like. So look, we have a good Chief of Staff. He's doing a lot of good work. I commend him for that. But we also have an organisation that only around a year ago had an independent report, judge-led, that highlighted extraordinarily serious cultural issues. We have had to set up a tribunal to look at these issues. So I just... I'm surprised that it took such a flurry of activity to establish this information.
Allegations of, for instance, bullying within the army have lingered around for 20-odd years. Now, I know that they are slightly different than allegations of sexual assault and how to deal with criminality, but it does point to a flawed culture that seems endemic if you stitch the two of them together.
Yeah, and look... Let me also say this, because I'm really conscious when a controversy blows up in any organisation that the morale of people in the organisation, the good, decent people, can take a real blow too. I'm really proud of the men and women who serve in the Defence Forces at home and abroad. We all know them. We know them in our own lives, in our own community. There's people serving in Lebanon right now doing our country so proud on peacekeeping missions. But it is for them and the integrity of our Defence Forces that we've got to get this right. So, last point I just want to make on this part. I also understand that in any organisation an issue can arise. It's how you deal with that issue is how we get judged.
One apparently minor thing, but just to ask your view on it, the requirement for the Defence Forces to provide a senior officer to give a report to the court in respect to the standing of a soldier who may be accused of something, I recognise that in no way is that a character reference, but it can serve by coincidence as character reference. Should that be ended?
I think it definitely needs to be reviewed because this is not about, if you're brought before a court of our land, your job should be irrelevant. And how good or bad a soldier you were is not relevant to did you assault somebody, in my humble opinion. But I think that's probably the opinion of most people in this country. So like there's a need for a little bit of straight talking on this. Things that may have happened in the past and may have seemed just like that's what we do aren't acceptable in modern Ireland anymore. They're not acceptable and they need to change. But let me say this, we're going to get to a good place here. We are going to get this right because we have to. And I think the steps that the Chief of Staff and the Taoiseach took in the last couple of days are welcome. But also, thank God for Natasha O'Brien, because imagine had she come out of that court and gone home that evening and said, that's that. She didn't. And as a result of her actions, and I want to acknowledge this, as a result of her actions, there are now good follow-up actions that are happening and that are essential.
Before we wrap up, I'm conscious of your time. You described how busy you have been over the past while. Now that you are Taoiseach, we are sitting here in gorgeous, sunny Lochee at a music festival. Do you get any opportunity? Can you put the feet up? Can you throw on a pair of shorts, have a beer, relax, see a band? Or is that all behind you?
Well, I don't know if it's behind me, but at the moment when you have a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old at home, I'm not sure how much gratitude I'd get if I decided to put on a pair of shorts, put up the feet and listen to a band. So there is a degree of having to juggle many, many important priorities in life. But look, I'm delighted to be here. It's And I should say, because we are here, like to have this festival in Lochee in regional Ireland is hugely beneficial. Like this in Dublin would be great. This in regional Ireland is disproportionately beneficial to Roscommon. And I think it's great.
And it has to be said, it's a gorgeous
spot. And it's a beautiful setting, yeah.
Taoiseach, thank you so much. That is Taoiseach Simon Harris.
The Anton Savage Show with Kiri's.ie on News Talk.
American Log Homes and Cabins is assisting a developer in liquidating several of our kits that have deposits on them for only the balance owed. Most of these will save you more than half of the original cost. An example, our Augusta model, normally $42,450, is being sold for $16,500. Our Biloxi model, normally $36,825, is being sold for $14,500. This includes delivery, excluding California, Oregon, Washington, Arizona, Idaho, Alaska, and Hawaii. But we will pay partial shipping to those states. These kits have not been manufactured, and there's no time limit on delivery. This is a log home kit that includes complete blueprints from foundation details to roof, stack sheets, and a construction manual. Any do-it-yourselfer or builder can erect the logs. Kits do not include any part or roof, windows, or doors. Please call 704-602-3035 for availability. You can also visit our website at www.americanloghomesandcabins.com.